And arriving into this moment for our Saturday workshop, Teaching Mindfulness Online, we're taking a moment just to arrive into your body, your heart, and your mind. And as we start this workshop together, first of all, finding a place of balance, then maybe just reflecting on what it is that you would like to receive from this workshop. What's important that you don't want to forget to ask or get clarity on? And then in your own time, in your own way, the invitation is to make your way back into this community. These people, just like us, practicing in this uncertain time that we have, where a lot of our businesses have just been thrown up into the air, and who knows where they will land. So just coming back into the room, opening the eyes whenever you're ready, if they've been closed. And I've unmuted you. However, if there's a lot of noise in your own particular background, then please feel free to put the mute back on again. This isn't meant to be a lecture where you sit there and I speak at you. Please ask any questions as we go along if you've got them, and there will be time for questions afterwards. And we'll try and cover what we can in this particular workshop. I am planning a longer workshop to dive more into the subjects that we're covering. I'm not quite sure when that will be or how long the actual workshop will be, but I'm hoping that this workshop will just give you some ideas of what to do next, of how you can take your business forward from a place of balance, from equanimity, rather than sort of a place of panic and, oh my goodness me, what am I going to do? So that's the sort of the aim for this particular workshop. As I said on the Facebook page, if you saw it, which I'm sure you did, otherwise you wouldn't be here, come to think of it, how to stop analysis paralysis. Yeah. And analysis paralysis, I can give you my own experience of it, is where you end up in a tailspin going around and around and around, thinking that you've got to offer everything to everybody, and how can you get it out there as quickly as you possibly can. And so it's about, you know, remembering our practice and coming back into place of balance, so that you can define what will be a great experience for your participants, and to really stop and think about what is it that they actually need right now, rather than what we think we want to offer them. Because two things I'll say to you. One is that, okay, we think people have got a lot of time right now, but actually the reality is a lot of people haven't got a lot of time. They might be working from home. There's two types of, I've seen. There's the people who are working from home, but are asked to be online for the whole of the time that they're at home. They are in conferences all day. So they're not going to have any more time than if they were working on a full-time basis. Yeah. There are other people out there who maybe are at home and they're not able to work from home, but they can't go to work. But the chances are that they are at home they've got worries about money. They don't know what to do with the children all day if they've got children there. So really, what is it that we can offer them? Yeah. What is it that we can offer all of these people? So we want to make sense of this new reality that we've got and to really find ways of... Find ways of practicing and offering people what they want rather than what we think they need. And so we're going to look at three different types of online offerings that we can give people. So I want us to get away from the idea that the 8-week course is the only thing that we have in our toolbox to be able to offer people, and we'll come back to that more in a minute. But first of all, let's think about how we're going to respond to COVID-19, this pandemic that has landed in our laps. And we can go into denial and say, no, you know, this isn't happening yet, and everything's going to be all right tomorrow. We can go into panic mode. Oh my God, what am I going to do? And we can run around like headless chickens, as they say. Or we can plan. And this is what we're really here to talk about, this idea of planning. What is it that I can do? What are the resources that I've got? Because one of the other things that we've got to remember is actually all governments around the world have currently reduced the bandwidth of the internet. I don't know whether you've noticed that yourself, of a slowing down of things. The quality is not as good. Yeah. So we've got that to contend with as well. But actually, one of the most important things I think we need to remember at this time is something that Jon Kabat-Zinn actually shared with Vidyamala Birch recently, who is the founder of Breathworks in the UK. And he said, the 8-week course is absolutely always going to be there. It stood the test of time for 40 years. However, going forward in the climate that we're in, with people's limited amounts of time, etc., then this might be the time that mindfulness-based interventions or MBIs start to become more applicable. People are short on time. Maybe they've got half an hour before the kids are going to want their attention. Maybe they don't have enough money to be able to put towards an 8-week course. So let's just think sort of outside of the so-called boxes that we might have boxed ourselves in. And to do that, we need to come into our own practice and to sit with it. Otherwise, our mind will just be doing that 9-dots puzzle of staying within the dots, and it won't be able to see outside. Well, we won't be able to see the new opportunities. Now, you might be hearing a term that's going around the training institutes or training organizations at the moment about something called the flipped classroom. Anybody heard the term flipped classroom? No? Okay, then perhaps it's not as widely known as I thought. Well, so, okay, let's go back a little bit.
Well, informed as you, Kathy.
Yeah, maybe not, yeah. So basically what's been happening in universities around the world is they are going more to what they call the flipped classroom. It's already happening. And that's where a traditional class is, there was a lot of emphasis on students going along to a lecture, a workshop, lots of time in lectures, a little bit of time doing the work on their own at home. So this so-called flipped classroom flips it. Yeah. And so there's a lot of time spent on their own, reviewing videos, literature, listening to podcasts, all of that sort of thing. And then a small amount of time when they actually go to lectures is spent where they are having time to really deepen their practice, to ask questions, to be supported. And I think we can learn a lot from that. Yeah, we can learn a lot from that. And that's what I mean when we're going to go and look at the three types of offerings that we can offer. We might need to just literally flip the way that we teach. Yeah. Just to flip it over and see what comes out. So a question we need to ask ourselves is, what should be our focus? And I know a lot of you are here because you're thinking, oh God, what should my focus be? Where do I go with this? What do I do? And let's look at COVID-19 actually as an opportunity to change the way we work. to really revisit everything that we're currently doing and saying, well, is this the right way to do it, or is there a different way? And I'm not saying we're going to change everything, because we're not, patently we're not. And we're not saying that we're going to be in physical isolation forever. Yeah, this is probably going to go along an awful lot further and a lot longer than we think it is. And it might be periods where we're in physical isolation and then we go back out and then we have to come back in again. We just don't know. It's a new virus. So we need to focus attention on what it is that we can do and really develop appropriate solutions. So one of the things I would actually recommend to everybody is to start small. Yeah. To not suddenly think you're going to reinvent the wheel or necessarily even take your 8-week course online. And we'll talk about who that's probably okay to do and who I would say, whoa, hang on just a second. We'll talk about that in a minute. So start small. So what is it that you could do that would be small? Yeah, what can you offer? Yeah. And only you know what the answer is to that. Yeah, you know your communities, you know your teaching context. So what is it that you could do that's not going to take you very much time, that you can put out there and that can be supporting your community? So some of the things that you can do on this short-term plan is to record and upload short videos. YouTube has you can have a subscriber section for YouTube, or you can do just upload them to YouTube. If you've got websites, you can make links to your YouTube videos. There's all sorts of things that you can do if you record in your own home. Most people's cameras, most people's phone, I was looking around for mine for some reason. Most people's cameras are perfectly okay to be able to record short videos and to upload them onto YouTube. We don't have to suddenly become a professional at recordings and a director, etc. Yeah, keep things simple. That's sort of the first layer that we can do. So if we think three layers, you've got a layer where you are just producing stuff and you're putting it out there, whether it's on YouTube or whether it's on your website or however you disseminate it, where people can watch whatever it is that you're providing at a time that suits them. Yeah, there's no interaction. You're just putting things out and they can watch them. That's your first level. And maybe as you start to ponder and plan, there's elements of other things that you've been perhaps teaching in in-person classes that you could put onto a video so that people then are online for shorter periods of time for practice and support. But other things, it might be, okay, well, perhaps you'd like to watch these videos before we meet again. So you're giving them things that they can actually review. The second thing that we can do is, for those of you who are clever with PowerPoint presentations, is to actually produce a set of slides and do a voiceover. So you're recording yourself, and we'll talk about recording and things using Zoom a little bit later, of actually having these slides and talking over them and then actually putting that out there. So that's where there's more interaction. You might even have people you might go a little bit further and have people in a Zoom room with you and you're showing PowerPoint presentations, but there is very little sort of contact. Yeah. What I'll do at the end of this, towards the end when we're looking at Zoom, is it'll be very wobbly, for which I apologize, but I will turn my camera around so you can see what people would see when you're showing a presentation. Yeah, so there's a presentation, you'll only see people tiny across the top of the screen, and you'll probably only see about four people. The rest of the people have just disappeared, they're off on another screen. So if you're wanting to think about running longer things, please limit the amount of PowerPoint presentations that you do online, because you're disconnecting from the very thing that you want to be connecting with. And this is what they talk about when they say moving towards an empty curriculum. It's not that you just throw the curriculum out the window and you go, right, okay, what should we do today? It's just that you allow the practices and the inquiry from the practices and the experiential exercises to do the work for you. So there'll be very little need for a PowerPoint presentation or anything like that. There will be times when you need to use a whiteboard in some sense, and we'll look at the options for that as well. But I can tell you, when I first started teaching online, I used to be sat here with a whiteboard here, and it was very awkward and very horrible and not particularly that professional. So let's see if we can get away from that. So PowerPoint presentations with talkovers, again, you can put them out there on YouTube or whatever. Little bit more contact perhaps, but again, it's just something that people can watch whenever they would like to watch it. So got a lot of benefit, think about doing them. Then the third layer really is delivering sort of live online stuff like we're doing here, yeah, where you've got interaction with people, where you can guide practices as we've been doing, you can support them, you can do all sorts of different things. And all it needs is to be able to be familiar with this new context of delivery. And so you really do need to become very familiar with it before you launch yourself out there, yeah? What I would say before we move on to that is, as you're making your slides, if you decide to go that route, don't be a perfectionist in your slides. You know, don't procrastinate until you get the best of this or the best or the most perfect illustration or whatever it happens to be. Because if we do that, we'll probably never get there. Yeah. So think about quote I use all the time when I'm training you, as you probably remember, it is just for now, it's enough. Just for now, it's enough. You can always go back and change it if it really doesn't work. And that's a real point as well. Be prepared to scrap things. Yeah, you might come up with a brilliant idea and then on reflection you think, hey, no, that's not such a great plan. I did that recently. I put out a 30-hour come and review and learn more about delivering online of the 8-week course. And then on a reflection, I thought, nah, that doesn't deliver value for money. What the hell was I doing? Excuse the phraseology. So there are different options of doing that, but be prepared to scrap stuff. So really think about it from the participant. Yeah. Do you find that great online experience for the participant? What are they going to get from it? And be honest with yourself. And I was thinking, yeah, it sounds like a great plan, but in reality, I don't think it'll work. It won't deliver. So scrap stuff. So the longer term is, as I say, don't be a perfectionist. Write a short mini course, a mini workshop, something like that. Yeah? Don't get overly focused on, oh, I've got to get an 8-week course out there. Because as we've said, people might not have the time. They might not have the money. Bandwidth is going to be low. But also one thing that we really need to recognize is the recommendation from UMass and Bangor is that you don't change anything in an 8-week course until you've taught it at least 6 times. And honestly, that's because you have, in my experience anyway, we can't understand the depth of the spectrum of teaching intentions. We don't know what it is that the recipe is. So we might be thinking, I'll use a cooking metaphor. We might be thinking that we're going to get a sponge cake, but actually, okay, Nelly, that's fine. Okay. We might be thinking of putting a recipe together for a sponge cake, but we might end up with a flapjack because we've taken something out and that might be the very thing that is what was needed. So there is that recommendation. And obviously teaching online is changing something because there's a lot that you need to take into consideration teaching online. We're not going to be able to cover all of it here. I'll give you some ideas of things to look at. And supervision can also suit to help you and to support you with that. But in the same way as we would say to you after a level one course or a level two course, only you can decide when it's the right time for you to teach an 8-week course. Only you can decide if it's the right time for you to teach an 8-week course online. Yeah. you have to really think carefully about it. And of course, there'll be the financial part of your brain going, yes, we really need to do this. Da, 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 da. And then there might be the sort of the more mindful area that's going, no, it's not time to do that. Yeah. So really think carefully about it. But what I'm hopefully you're hearing in my message is the decision is yours, but also that there are a lot of other things that we can run. So look at the content of an 8-week course and go, okay, I've got all of this stuff. It's the ingredients for workshops. It's the ingredients for doing a short video. It's the ingredients for doing a PowerPoint presentation with a talk over, etc. So look at it outside of the box as to actually what you've got. You'll get more business from it from that way rather than just focusing just on the 8-week course. Yeah. Hmm. So, where are we? She says, remembering to breathe. So, how do we define a great online experience? Well, first of all, keep in mind your resources. Yeah? What resources have you already got? Also, when you're looking at this, take into consideration your skill level. Yeah. Not all of us are going to be able to do everything, and that's okay. That's just the way it is. So really think about your resources and your skills. What is it that I can do? Keep in mind the purpose of the content. So in the same way as we always set an intention for a practice, think about what's the intention for this particular piece of work, this workshop, this class, whatever it happens to be. As you do that, I also recommend you take into consideration the spectrum of teaching intentions of what it is you're trying to do in each particular week. And actually, session one and session two is, and session three in some cases, and a little bit of session four, is rich pickings for workshops, yeah, and short content. Normally, we would be saying, don't go anywhere near session four until you've got the foundation of one, two, and three. However, I think there's a big need out there for us to be giving short workshops. I know Alex has already done them in Italy, and I think they're going down very well, on just people understanding what their stress reaction is and why they are so caught up in repetitive thinking, so caught up in their emotions, and giving them a couple of short practices to just help ground them. And I don't know whether Alex would like to say anything on that as to what's happened or what you found useful. Oh, she says.
Sorry, I wanted to speak without being unmuted. I'm finding, well, I sort of, well, first and foremost, hello everybody. Sorry. Sorry I was late as well. Yes, I found that I wanted, so my intention was I wanted to help people because, as you know, Italy sort of initiated, but we sort of have a bit 2 weeks more experience than everybody else in this, and that's about it. That people were, their reactive modes were just perfectly in sync with what our amygdala does in a moment of crisis. So my intention was to help people understand that they can actually do something about that reactive mode. So that sort of, I work my workshops around that because I just noticed that people had no idea how and why they were getting so stressed and why they weren't able to calm themselves. So I kind of created this little workshop on, okay, so this is what your mind is doing now. It's absolutely normal. So how can mindfulness help you? Basically, I've worked around that. And I keep repeating it. I keep repeating at the moment that workshop. I did a new one the other day on the negative thinking and the blob and how it creates. And again, what can we do about it? Then I'm in the process of creating another one about our expectations. So this is where we are. That's what we want. That's what we don't want. That's what we're trying to change. The conflict. Oh, no, this way. I do this.
Yeah. No, no, no. I wasn't. I was just saying discrepancy monitor. Yeah.
And so what can we do? You know, that we are in that crisis of trying to, it was all of this is unexpected. We don't like it. We can't plan anything. You know, there's an awful lot of what we don't want out there. So, and there's this huge amount of tension in the middle. So, you know, again, what can we do for my, I think I found it more useful just to do one concept sort of in an hour rather than try and cover masses. So it's just like one concept doing really so, and lots of drop-ins. I've given them little exercises of pick up the object, observe, as if it were the raisin, but use any object. So that's a grounding exercise. As for the kids, feet on the floor, bum on chair, and that's another one. I've noticed that the breath isn't really a very good anchor at the moment for most people. So I've been working on personally trying for everybody to try and find their own anchor.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's where I'm kind of at now.
Thank you.
But it's helping people. The feedback is good and it's helping people and they're like, more.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Jenny.
Have the workshops been 1 hour, did you say?
Yes.
Done most of them, sort of the short ones, 3/4 of an hour, because I try and get in sort of like a 20 minute or a couple 10 minute practices. The longer one this morning I did for 1.5 hours, so that was really good. I sort of like got in 2 or 3 concepts, but those were people who sort of have already come to my studio. They know a little bit about mindfulness, and it was sort of like, come on, let's get together and let's just go through again what you almost no, but they haven't done the course though. These were people who haven't yet done the course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, if we ever wanted a opportunity to work with mindfulness in a trauma sensitive way, well, then we've been given the opportunity of a lifetime. So if you haven't read David Trelevian's book on teaching trauma sensitive mindfulness, then please buy it. And as Alex was saying, you know, the breath isn't the anchor, but traditionally that's only been the anchor that we've taught people. We've moved over in the last couple of years into using alternative anchors, even before David Trelevian's book came out. But there's a lot of information into there on, you know, dealing with people with disassociation, with high levels of stress and trauma, and the types of things that we can do. So it's very valid. Yeah, thanks, Alex, for sharing that. You know, it's really important to look at these shorter workshops and not underestimate the benefit that they are going to be giving people. I think sometimes we overcomplicate things, and simple is the best way of going forward. Yeah. So really just think about that engagement level as well in whatever you're going to do. Is it going to be one way, as it's a video, so there's not going to be any engagement, or a voiceover of a PowerPoint presentation? Is it going to be two way, where I was on a webinar the other day where they were showing the presentation and there was the comments on down the side? I will do, Barbara. I'll come back onto the chats as well in a second. There was chats down the side of the screen, so people were asking questions and they came back to all of the questions at the end of it. But David, so that's sort of, let me come back to that. That is sort of the, excuse me, that's two-way. Yeah, so you've got chat and you've got you actually presenting. And then three-way, thanks Malwina. Three-way is actually where it's very interactive, where there's lots going on. You're presenting, there's lots of practices. You'll be saying, okay, you know, a practicing inquiry with people, etc. So that's the three ways that we've got. That's the three ways we've got of actually working. Yeah. We've talked about, yes, and I'll mention it again. Remember, they're likely to be working at home. Family there, so it's impossible to do larger sessions. Bandwidths are low. Money is tight. High levels of stress. What is it that we can do? Yeah, so think of ourselves as the emergency band-aid. And think too that these are people that might come back to you in the future to do an in-person 8-week course or a online 8-week course. Who knows? This isn't wasted work. It's there. You're there for your community. You're stepping up. You're doing what you can, and you're building client base, really. And that's an important thing to remember. And if you've got people who have taken your 8-week course and you've got email addresses, then send it out to them, everything that you're doing. So you're keeping them up to date with the latest offerings. Yeah. Exactly what it is that you're doing. Mm. So let's just check the chats before we go on too far. Lots of hellos. Nelly, yes. Nelly, we know you need to go. That's fine. Malwina gave the link for David Trelevian, and I shall reach across here and just show you the book. It's here. Trauma Sensitive Mindfulness. He has a TSM community that you can join. Trauma Sensitive Mindfulness. Webinars. I think they're probably only once a month now. They were a bit more regular than that, but I think they're only once a month now. And he has a bit of talk on a particular topic. Excuse me. And then he has a tendency to put you into chat rooms with other people to talk about things, which I'm not necessarily a fan of when I've gone along to talk to him. But you know, see what you think about it. It is a good resource for you. Somebody's just asked a question. Does anyone have experience? Well, can we come on to that? We'll come on to that, Jenny, when we're talking a bit more about Zoom. It's a very valid question.
Thanks.
We'll come on to that one in a minute. Okay. Yeah. So on the subject of trauma-sensitive mindfulness, then, you know, we need to be thinking about the language that we're using as well. Lots of encouragement, especially with these short courses and things where you won't have had the opportunity to do a sort of an interview with people, etc. So we need to be thinking about what it is that we're putting out there. And traditionally, we may have thought of the body scan as being one of the easiest practices to teach people, where in fact the research shows it's one of the most difficult for people to practice, especially if they do have some form of trauma in their lives. So just bearing in mind that the body scan can be seated, it can be lying down, it can be lying on your side, give them lots of permission, your words are guidance only, all of this sort of thing. If you're interested in more about the trauma sensitive language, those of you who perhaps took the course before this came in, then on our private community page, I will put up the recordings for the practices, so you can listen to my sort of versions of various things as well. Yeah, so that will be there. And we talked about anchors. The anchors are things other than the breath. And we're very vague nowadays about body parts, which you'll find. Sorry, the chats keep popping up and I keep losing my thread. What was I saying? Body scan. We're very vague about body parts.
You said be vague about body parts.
Thank you, Anne. Yes, we're very vague about body parts. So it's lower leg, top of the leg. We don't mention buttocks or pelvises or genitals or anything of that nature. So with a body scan, it would be sort of feet, lower legs, maybe the knees, tops of the legs, both legs, coming up into the torso, the front of the torso, the back of the torso, and you can split it down a little bit in between of torsos, etc. And then the hands and the arms, the shoulders, the neck, the head. So there's we're just avoiding those places that may be difficult for people. And it might not be difficult for people, but, you know, with a body scan, do we really need to go to people's genitals or breasts or various things? I'll leave that one for you to answer that one. Okay. So, some things to consider. Zoom, for those of you who may not know, Zoom can be free for you to use for sessions under, I think it's 3 people and under 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be longer than that or for more people than that, you need to pay. You don't have to pay a yearly subscription. You can pay a monthly subscription. So you just, if you know you're going to do something that month, you pay for the subscription. And if you're not going to do anything the next month, then you don't do anything. There's no need to do it. So they are going to encourage you to pay for a year in advance, but there is the monthly option. So nowadays.
How expensive is that?
I think I pay under 20 euros a month. I think it's okay. 17,
18.
14.99
in the UK.
$14.99 in the UK. So, yeah.
$14.99 in the USA too.
Yeah. It's not a huge amount of money. I think it's about 17 euros or something, something like that. It's well worth it. The Zoom paid facility gives you the opportunity of recording things. Yeah. So it might be the system that you use to record PowerPoint presentations or workshops or whatever. But the problem with that is that the video recording facility of Zoom is not always accepted by places like YouTube, etc. You can't upload what you record in Zoom. They've done a particular format on it. I'm not technically minded, so I can't tell you what it is. But I do know that you can't do it. However, you can also download and receive the audio track of what it is that you've recorded in Zoom. And it'll bring it down in, I think it's an MP4 format, which again is difficult to share with people, but you can very easily just type in MP4 to MP3 conversion into a search engine. It'll bring you up something free. I did it the other day for the recording that's already up on the community webpage. It's very easy to turn it into an MP3, which is then very shareable via Dropbox for bigger files. Yeah. One of the other benefits of a paid Zoom account, apart from recording, is that you have the ability to put people into chat rooms. So you can, just as we would put people into small groups in-person groups, we can do it with this too. So I'm just going to turn the camera around, and I apologize for people who already know how to do this. I'm not going to spend that long on it, but I just want to show you what it looks like. She says, ooh. Okay, so there you all are. Hello. So down the bottom here, you can see this bottom row. So if I take it across here, there's the mute button and stop video. There's the invite button, manage participants. So if I could just click on manage participants, you can see all the participants come up and I can mute you all. Yeah, you're all muted. Or I can unmute you all. So you're all unmuted. What I can also do is I can allow you to unmute yourself. Or, and this is really important, play entry chime or exit chime. It's like the doorbell ringing. I recommend you untick that, because otherwise every time somebody joins or goes in and out, the doorbell will ring. Can you see that? It's this one. It's in highlighted in blue. Play entry exit chime. Yeah. So tick. If you wanted them to play it, then you would do it. Otherwise, you take the tick off, and now it won't play. Yeah. So that's your participants. You can then come along to here, which is share a screen. So the share a screen is if you had a presentation that you wanted to show, or you wanted to share a whiteboard. So we'll have the whiteboard because I didn't open anything. So it will take a minute to do. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Okay. So now can you see? And now I can't see my, oh yes I can. Can you see my screen, which is what you'll be seeing as a presenter? Instead of being able to see all of you, all I can see is 5 of you. So as a teacher, that's going to be really difficult because you're going to have to scroll down to be able to see everybody. But actually, in the whiteboard facility here, what you can do is you can do this. As you can see, I'm not very good at that. Yeah. Or there is an option. Where has it gone? Let's go back into whiteboard, where you add a text box here. So if you were doing brainstorming, for example, and somebody wants to put up feeling hot, you can type in the word hot. Can you see? Yeah. So you're creating an instant board. Yeah. If you wanted to erase something, then you just rub it out. Yay. There we go. It's gone. Yeah. So we're going to stop sharing, which is this button up here. So we'll show that. So this is the thing to remember. If you're giving a course or a workshop, you're only going to be able to see a few people down the side. Yeah. It's not a grand plan. So let's stop the sharing. Okay. Yeah. So then on the bottom, let's have a look. We've got pause or stop recording. So I'm actually recording this, as you know, at the moment. So if I take this up to here, you can see this button that says I'm recording it. And what will happen is you get the choice of whether you're recording it to the cloud or whether you're recording it to your computer. I always record it to the cloud, and then they send me an email when it's actually ready for me to share. And I'm then given the option to either share it as a audio file or as a video file. So you choose which you want to do. Obviously, if you share a video file, it's going to be a bigger file. So very often I'll only ever share the audio file. Then a really interesting function here is the breakout rooms. So if I press this breakout room button here that's on the bottom, you can see that I can manually assign, or I can automatically assign you to little breakout rooms. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you in a breakout room. I'll come and find you. So I'm going to create some rooms. Okay. Move all participants into breakout rooms automatically. Breakout rooms automatically close. Notify them in 60 seconds. We're going to notify you in 10 seconds. So a warning comes up. So I'm just going to put you into rooms. So you'll be invited to join and then you can go.
Tree Levin does that every time he does a meeting. He does this. He has it down pat by now, though.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's awkward because I'm holding this. So one way you can get around actually this idea of not being able to see enough people is that you can get clever and have a second screen. So this means that if you're in your office or something and you've got a main computer and you've got a laptop, if you've got somebody that's computer literate, you can tell it's not me. If you've got somebody that is, then they're able to attach the second screen via the laptop. So you can then set it up in Zoom as being a sort of having two screens. So you've got the presenter view and you've got the participants view. So on one screen, you'll see the presentation that you're doing. On the other screen, you'll see all of your participants. Yeah. So if you're going to be doing something like that, that's the sort of the creme de la creme method. How to actually do that, I'm not sure, but there are help videos on the Zoom system. So if you wanted to have a look at the Zoom help desk, I put a link up onto Facebook the other day so that you could actually see. Sorry, Jenny.
Sorry. I think you can also, if you set yourself up as a co-host, you can have two screens. So you have one for the host and then another one for the co-host. I think that's, if you're going to settings, under settings, meeting,
yes,
there's an icon you tick to become a co-host.
Yes, there is.
So they become, so the co-host gets invited to the meeting too.
Uh-huh.
So the second screen.
Yeah, okay. I tried that the other day and I had difficulties with audio. I couldn't get the audio to work. I could get the video to work on one, the audio not to work on the other. So play around with it. And if anybody's got any tips and hints on that, other than what's available in the Zoom help desk, then let me know. Put it up on, please post on Facebook. And I'd ask you really to please post on the closed Facebook community page. Any questions that you've got, any successes that you've got, anything that you're finding is working, just post it up to there so that we can share and grow together. So I'm going to leave Zoom there, apart to say there are pitfalls to Zoom. And this is my experience. You don't want anybody to have children in the room. Yeah, cuddling a child as they're watching your, taking part in your workshop is not a grand plan for everybody else. Yeah. Please ask them not to have any pets in the room. They can't tell you the number of times that I've been watching a cat's bottom as you're as you're trying desperately to remain serious and you open your eyes. No, Sadie's very well behaved. Yes, she's very well behaved. But if you've got a random cat.
Fun speech. No, not if I'm teaching. I would have her out of the room if I was teaching, for sure.
Yeah. Oksana is saying, kids, that's what I have now. Yeah, exactly. There is nothing worse, I could tell you, than opening your eyes to see a cat's bottom facing you. It's not something that you want to do. You want to be saying to people, please don't eat while you're on session. I know this sounds like just general, they should know, but that's us assuming that they should know. So please don't eat anything while you're there. They'll come with their breakfast or they're in their pajamas or something. So set up exactly what it is that you want, because they're not going to know. Yeah. If it's okay to be in their PJs, then tell them it's okay to be in their PJs. Join me in the morning for the silent meditation. I'm in my onesie. You'll see me in my onesie. But apart from that, it's not appropriate. I would suggest that they don't view it on their phone unless it's something that it really doesn't matter how much of things that they can see. You really want them to be able to be on a laptop or a tablet at the very least, or a computer screen. Otherwise they're just not going to be able to see. And if you're trying to share things, you know how what it's like yourself on a phone, it's very small. And be ready, as I say, to fail and to learn from it and to abandon a lot of what you create and just pick yourself up. Don't judge it. We all learn from and grow from trying things. Yeah. One tip I didn't include on Zoom is to mute people during the practices when you're guiding. Yeah, remember to unmute them. Otherwise, you'll be asking your first question and then wondering why nobody's answering you. But do mute them, yeah. And perhaps mute them at the end of a meeting, so at or a workshop. After you've said, thank you very much, thank you for joining me, perhaps mute everybody then as well so that the cacophony of people leaving doesn't happen, because it can become very, very noisy at the end. Yeah. Video eats bandwidth. So if you're having problems with quality of audio, then think about, then maybe you're going to have to go to just audio only, and then that depends on exactly what it is that you're teaching as to whether that's going to be appropriate for you. And consider, just one more thing with Zoom, consider giving attendees a waiting room, so you can set it up on settings in Zoom as waiting room, so when they join the workshop they come into a waiting room rather than sitting nervously looking at each other. It's okay once people know each other, because then you can be chatting and saying hello. But for that workshop where they've never seen each other before, it might be a little bit off-putting. to be online. So if you keep them in a waiting room, and then when you in actually then open the waiting room and people can come in and join you. Yeah. Okay.
Can I ask you where is the waiting room setting?
Yeah. So you have to go in. It's not in here. It's not in your actual live call. You have to go onto the Zoom settings.
Okay.
So what you do is you go into your account as if you haven't got a call open, and there's a little cog. Yeah. And it'll go into settings. It's either in there, or you might have to visit zoom.com and log into your account and go into settings in there and go into waiting room. And you have to tick a box that says activate waiting room.
Okay.
Yeah. So not everything is on your Zoom setup. You sometimes have to visit, you sometimes have to visit the, I keep getting distracted by chats. Please don't stop doing them. But if you notice, it's because I'm trying to read what's there. You might have to visit zoom.com for certain things. Let's have a look at these chats. So one from Jenny, does anyone have experience of linking MailChimp into Zoom to access subscriber list?
No. How would you, if you have a database then of subscribers, how do you send out an invitation if you want to invite them all?
MailChimp. If you're already using MailChimp. Aha, Janice has said, I've just found this in the chat. I've just found this might be useful. Zapier. I've heard of Zapier before. Apps MailChimp integration with Zoom. I don't know whether it's whether that's a paid subscription though, or whether it's a free one. I was having a look at Zapier the other day and I couldn't make up my mind whether it was. But I think perhaps the simplest way is just to send it out in your newsletter with the link. But you've also then got to think about, if they're going to be paying for it, how do you monetize it? How do they pay? So think about what you're going to be doing for that. And I don't know, you're all individual setup, so it's I can't actually comment on monetizing things.
You'd have to, then you would go into your mail, produce an email in MailChimp.
Yes.
An invitation in MailChimp.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And just send it out to your list there. What other questions have we got? I've got a whole list, Jenny, of questions. If I can go through them.
Okay.
When you set up the link, you can choose. Is that choose the waiting room, Jenny? So you can choose when you set up the link. When you set up the actual meeting, you can choose whether they go into a waiting room or not. Barbara, do you use already written flip charts in the online workshop? It depends exactly on what it is. I tend to not use very many at all anymore. Where's she gone? I don't even know where she is. Sorry, Barbara, you're there. I have very little pre-prepared now. I probably only have 3 or 4 at the best of times, and online I find I don't have them as much. But yeah, you could have some pre-prepared ones if you want to use them, and then do the whiteboards beside you and just play around with where the camera is, as to where you are, as to how you have your setup of your whiteboard, because you want to be able to use it easily without being cramped. But remember, if you're sitting down when you set up the camera, are they only going to see a section of your torso, or worse still, your groin, if you stand up to use the whiteboard? So try all of that out before you actually do things.
What I meant is, like, I used it last week already in an online workshop. I had my flip chart, but I put it online and I went through the flip chart doing it like this, not having it next to me, but, you know, putting that everyone can see it, like online.
Yes, exactly. So that's a good way of doing it, Barbara, is of to think about, okay, instead of using a flip chart, is there something that I really want them to be able to have? So send it to them. You put it online, send it to them as an additional handout. So you can say, please look at page 5 of the additional handout. So you've got something there as a talking point, rather than being, you know, all cramped, etc. And if you're able to put it onto your website with a page that they can go to, then that's even better. Karen, well, I don't know whether she's already gone, but thank you, Karen, for joining if you've already left. What about using Skype is from Anne. Skype, yes, Skype is also a very good system. However, with Skype, if the signal drops, then people have to sign back in again. With Zoom, people can, it just, they don't have to do anything. It comes back automatically.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the main benefit of using Zoom. What other programs would you recommend to you to record a video for YouTube? I would recommend you just use your phone. Yeah, you've all got video settings, record settings on your phones. Just use those and keep it simple so you don't have to get into, if it's video rather than audio, if it's video, don't make it so complicated then that you've then got to become a video producer in how to cut and trim it. Yeah, try and do it in one take and you know, just say, just, you know, allow for the bloopers if they're in there. Don't overcomplicate things. If you overcomplicate it, nothing will ever happen. Per and I used Skype for the first time this week with a small amount of participants. Yeah, it does work. Karen said she's got to go. What app do you recommend to edit videos? Very good question, Sylvia. There are apps out there. It depends on your phone as to what you're actually recording it in. Apple have, I believe, on their Apple phones, a system already there for you to be able to edit your videos. They're very clever. If you're in Android, then I'm open to anybody's sharing of success stories of anything that you've used in editing Android videos. Anybody got any tips and hints for... Not yet. I'm sure we will have. I will have too, because I'm currently turning my part of my house into a space to use for teacher training, because I'm going to be doing a lot more stuff online. And those of you who know, you probably already know that I'm doing the May level 2 teacher training course is going to be live online with interactive video conferencing. So I'm turning a space in my house into somewhere that's more appropriate rather than my office here. So I will be recording videos and things too to put up to a site called Teachable, which I posted a while ago about a site that you can use to put up and make passive income from as well. I think it, from the research I did, it comes up to be one of the best platforms for sharing videos and things.
Time will tell. I didn't get that. What is it called?
Teachable. I put the link on Facebook the other day, Anne, so you'll be able to just go back through the history and find it.
Facebook is still, to me, like a foreign country. I keep finding things, but by mistake all the time. That's why I had to call Sinead to figure out how to get to this place today.
Okay. Sorry. It's called Teachable.
Okay.
As it sounds.
Good.
Yeah.
They had a workshop last week, a couple days ago, I think.
Sorry? Oh, yes, they did. Sorry, Rich, I wondered where you were. Yeah, they did have a workshop the other day. They come up quite high on support, etc. with things. Okay. So that's all I've got for you at the moment. You know, I am putting together a longer workshop. Inez, I'll come back to you a sec. I'm putting together a longer workshop called The 7 Pillars of Teaching Online, which I want to drill down a bit more into different things and different ideas and ways of being. But I'm hoping that this has just given you some ideas of what you can do to look outside the box of what it is that you might be at first started to think that was all that you've got to offer. You've got an awful lot more of resources, an awful lot more that you can do on those three layers. So just to reiterate those, you've got videos that you can put out there that people can watch at any time. You've got, whether that's paid or whether it's unpaid, that's completely up to you. You've got the second level where there's limited interaction. Maybe there's some chats or you can hear them and you're doing a presentation. And then there's the sort of the full Monty, the third way, where it's very interactive. Yeah, and there's lots of room to do everything that we would normally do. And for those of you who are on the fence about teaching online, because I know there are people out there that go, oh my goodness me, no, we can't do this. Then, you know, they are teaching degree courses online. They have been doing for many, many years. There's a 2017 opinion paper that I've put online as well about teaching mindfulness online. And he actually talks about the fact that in a lot of cases, teaching online is better than in person for all sorts of reasons. You don't have to travel. There's no costs involved. You're more able to do it because it takes less time. You might feel safer in your own environment, all sorts of different things. So if you've not read that paper, that opinion paper, then go back onto the Facebook page and have a look for it. If you can't find it, I'll post it again. Let's have a look at this chat. Ines, can you talk more about the most suitable content which would be best to start with to offer a short MBI? Anything from session one, session two, maybe session three, and a little bit of the stress reaction as Alex was sharing on you know, what it is that's causing us the stress and the those short practices that we can use to help us find a place of balance. So a stop practice. When you trained, it was probably called a three-step breathing space. We now call it three-step anchoring space because we talk about anchors rather than the breath. A pause. Any small practice like that is absolutely applicable for the times that we're in now. Yeah. 10 minutes of mindful movement, things like this. Martin, there's a free Microsoft video editor which is officially not distributed but still available for third parties. It's very good. I don't have it on my phone, but if anyone is interested, I have it on my computer at home. Yes, please. And Jenny, how do people feel morally in the current situation between charging and free practices? I think we have to not get caught up in that, oh, we've got to offer everything for free. I think it's good to be able to offer some things for free, and there's so much out there that people are spoiled for choice. But I think we also need to understand that we are a business. Yeah. And that it is perfectly okay to be continuing to charge prices for your courses as you think fit. Yeah. It's a very personal decision. I reduced the price of my 8-week course for groups the other day because I wanted to offer it slightly less. But otherwise, yeah, think about it. But, you know, as Barbara's just posted up, I think free sessions are a great way to play around with Zoom. They are, absolutely. Yeah, when people... Thanks, Martin. Just get used to this technology so that you're able to then feel confident in what you're offering people, because you do need to be thinking about, okay, what's the online experience going to be for the participants? What am I expecting them to gain from it? What experience have I got? How confident I am with this? So there's a lot of self-reflection needed here about what you do and how you do it. Yeah, how will you respond to it? What's the recommended price ratio for 8-week course live online? Exactly the same, Ines. I don't think there's a difference. You could possibly do it a little bit cheaper because you think to yourself, well, I haven't got the price of the venue, etc. But you still got the price of your time. So, you know, think about it. I don't think we should differentiate between online run well and an in-person course. But the definition there is online run well. Yeah.
Katie?
Yes.
I would like to ask you, what do you plan to include in that one day lesson about
I don't know if it's going to be a day yet. I'm still planning content. The actual duration of it will come from the content. So I'll let you know as soon as I can of exactly what it's going to include and what the timings are going to be. So you can make a decision whether it's something that you would like to do. There will be a cost involved with it because it's a bit longer than this one, and I've got to do a lot of work to prepare it. All right. So any other questions then, queries, comments, thoughts? Oh, hang on, we've got some new chats down here. Oh, that was the one from Martin's.
I would have a question.
Yes, Barbara.
I actually have a MBSR course, and I actually talk to all of my participants if it's okay online, because you know, the ones who've signed up, some dropped out, some stayed. Then we had like the impulse workshop, and they said, yeah, they want to wait after that. And then I said, ah, actually, it's quite nice to have that online, you know, feeling. But I still will pay the same price. And I told them, you know, when until now the circumstances are like online, but afterwards, when it's possible, we will be meet in person. So it will be a mixed course.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I have no chance anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. If you, that's a very good point, actually. I meant to mention it earlier. If you're in the middle of teaching an 8-week course, you've got no choice really to dive in, even if you don't think you, well, you have got a choice. I'll explain it in a second, but it might be that the choice is being made for you, and you, as Barbara's done, you know, you offer it to people, and you might feel that you're not ready to teach the 8 weeks, but actually it might just be an opportunity to just finish it off and then make the decision, okay, so how did that feel? Do I want to go and do it again? But in my experience, you'll have people who want to continue online, and those that will say, no, there's too much going on in my life, it's not the time for me to continue. So just see. You're right.
I'm just wondering, Kathy, just one more question. Why do you think that sessions 5, 6, and 7 would not be suitable for a short workshop? Because there are also things in there that could be actually shared as a 1-hour workshop.
Yeah, maybe you could take something out, like labeling thoughts or something, but the idea, or emotions, but the idea is that they haven't really got the foundation of mindfulness to be able to understand what it is that you're doing. So I think that the best idea is, you know, maybe just saying, and if you notice yourself thinking, then choosing to come back into the present moment. Keep it very, very simple rather than going fully into those sessions would be what I would recommend, but that's not to say that's what you decide to do in the end. Somebody's woofing. All right. Okay. So if there are no further questions.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
I mean, how would you, in the session 3, where you have the mindful movements, and how do you teach the mindful movement? You're just talking. You just talk them through. Like in the MP3.
Yeah, there's no difference. You, and I would suggest that you do, I found it easier to do seated mindful movement than standing mindful movement. It depends on how you've got your camera set up or what else you're going to do. Okay. But I tend to do seated mindful movement. Otherwise, you get people to stand up and you are looking at people's crutches or something, which is not a great plan. So seated mindful movement is quite good. And then you just need to push yourself back far enough so people can do it. And then you're practicing in the same way as they are. So depending on if you've got, I've got my headphones on at the moment, so that's the limit to how far I could go back without ripping them off my head. But you just do it in exactly the same way. So okay. The tip is to really look at every single aspect of the session, say, and think to yourself, okay, so how am I going to teach this? In the same way as we would prepare to teach it in person, and we would think the same thing depending on the teaching content and the venue, etc. Do it for your online. How am I going to teach this? How am I going to teach the raisin? Am I going to get them to have a raisin? How am I going to teach this? How am I going to teach that? Really go through it. Janos, you've got to go. Lovely to see you. We'll catch up again soon. I need to see your baby at some point. I think he's already gone. Okay. Yeah, so just look at every single aspect and decide. I was saying, so I've got a couple of chats. Martin, I went to teach training this week. It was interesting as a complete package, but an expense. It's only about 39, 40 euros a month if you pay it monthly, I think. The sessions were recorded. If anyone's interested, I believe you can still watch the webinars for further details. I've done a number of MOOCs, which use a different structure for online teaching. Kathy, do you, or does anyone else have an experience with MOOCs on mindfulness?
Yes, I have.
What's MOOC? Sorry, I don't know what MOOCs
MOOC
are.
Is like a massive online training course. I can't remember what the exact words are, but there's some platforms. That's how I got to mindfulness, actually. I got to Palo Yu's mindfulness was how I got to mindfulness. No, actually, yeah. It even went before. I went to EDX, is an app on the iPhone, and you have lots of trainings. And the way I got to mindfulness was the theory and practice of yoga. And there was an introduction to mindfulness. And then I started looking for mindfulness online, and you have lots of courses. Free of charge, excellent quality. And that's how I got, you know, the introduction to mindfulness. And that's how I got to Kathy in the end. But MOOCs are absolutely fabulous, honestly. I mean, to learn anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be crazy enough. It's available.
Martin, if you could put a link or some information up on the Facebook page, that would be brilliant so people can investigate it. Okay, thank you. So unless anybody's got anything else to ask, I'm going to call it to a close, because we said it was going to take an hour and we're now an hour and 18 minutes. So I would just like to say thank you for everybody attending. I hope I've managed to answer your questions and to cover some basics of some ideas of how to get started. And I will post details, as I say, of the 7 pillars course and what it actually entails and how long that's going to be, etc. In a few days' time. I am going to take tomorrow off. I am going to do nothing online. So I'm not even going to be there for the 7:30 meditation. So if you're there, you'll be on your own in your jammies. I'm not even going to be there. I'm going to give myself a morning off. Otherwise, back to normal on Monday. Send me an email or post on Facebook. Otherwise, I'll see you soon. And as I say, I will post up a detail of what day it will be that I'm online if anybody wants to ask any questions. It might be that it will be a moving feast. So it'll be, right, today, everybody, I've got between this time and this time, I'm going to be in a Zoom room. Here's the link. If you want to come in for a cup of tea just to say hello, then just pop in, say hello, ask a question if you've got. Yeah. All right. So.
All right.
May you all be well, is what I would say. May you all take care of yourself. Do whatever it is that you need to do to self-isolate. Learn from our experiences in Spain and Italy. If it's not there with you as it is with us now, it's probably coming. So do what you can to keep yourself safe.
All right, same to all of you. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hope to see you again soon. Bye-bye. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Everybody, great seeing you.
Bye. Bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great to see everyone.
I'll pause you.